everyone. My name is Olivia Sundberg. I'm the president of the Debating Society at UCL, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome all of you to our last debate of the term on the motion, "This House Believes That Slut Walks Harm Feminism." So we have a panel of distinguished speakers here for you this evening. So as to the format of today's debate, for those of you that have not been here before, we have two speakers speaking in proposition, two speakers speaking in opposition. Each speaker will have 7 minutes to speak. At 1 minute, you will hear a bang coming from over here. At six, like that. At 6 minutes, you will hear another bang, also like that. And at 7 minutes, you will hear two bangs, which is when the speakers conclude their speech. Like, we'll give them some 15 seconds. Between the first and the second bang, the audience has an opportunity to offer points of information. These are questions directed to the speaker, aim to challenge what they're saying, and we would like to encourage all of you to ask them and to get as engaged in the debate as possible. Please bear in mind that you're not allowed to ask the question until the speaker has accepted you, so you can stand up and say, on that point, or something like that. But please wait for them to say yes, please. And speakers, we'd like to encourage you to maybe take one, maybe 2 points, but not more than that, since your time keeps running. But it's at your discretion. Don't feel obliged to accept them either. After the four main speeches, we will be moving on to the floor, where everyone will have an opportunity to give a speech of up to 3 minutes, either in proposition, opposition, or abstention of the motion. As per usual, the best speech of the evening will win either a box of chocolates or a bottle of port. You can choose. After that, we will have a 4 minute summary speech for either side with no points of information. And after that, we will have a vote, and then we will head to the TCR. And finally, please bear in mind that the speakers are not necessarily expressing their own views on the topic. While all of them are experts and incredibly knowledgeable on this topic and have a lot of opinions, they are debating a motion that we have given them with a wording that we have given them. So if you disagree with what they're saying, please note that this is not necessarily what the speakers themselves believe, though some of the things may be. So now to introduce our distinguished speakers for today's debate. Speaking first in proposition will be is a second year classics student in the Department of Greek and Latin at UCL and regularly represents UCL at debating competitions around the UK and Europe. Her successes this term include reaching the semi-finals of the Cambridge Women's Open. She is an active member of the UCLU Women's Network and has been involved in campaigns this term, including the I Love Consent and Zero Tolerance to Sexual Harassment and Zero Tolerance to Sexual Harassment campaign. We welcome speaking with her in proposition. She has a first class degree in philosophy from the University of Birmingham and currently works in speech and debate with the English Speaking Union, which is a distinguished educational charity based in London. Over the last 5 years, she has been deeply involved in various feminist and activist campaigns, societies, and associations. We welcome her here this evening as well. Speaking first in opposition will be Saskia Nagel. Saskia is a second-year social policy and government student at the London School of Economics, an institution which she also will be representing at the World University Debating Championship this month in Malaysia. Saskia took part in the Slut Walks when she was 16 and has been deeply involved in feminist activism since. In particular, she has gone on to work for the MP Stella Creasy on gendered violence, as well as teaching sex education at Woodcraft Walk. We welcome Saskia here this evening. Last but not least, speaking second in opposition is Zara Faris. Zara is a graduate in Arabic and Islamic Studies from SOAS University. She has lived for a year in Egypt and is now a researcher and international speaker for the Muslim Debate Initiative. Zara has delivered lectures at countless UK universities on the subjects of women in Islam, justice for women and men, feminism, and Muslims in the West. She has also spoken at numerous community centres in the UK and at the Islamic Cultural Centre of Ireland and has regular media appearances on the TV and radio. We welcome Zara here this evening. So, with no further ado, I would like to welcome to open the debate proposition on the motion, "This House Believes That Slut Walks Harm Feminism."
Okay, so in proposition today, we believe that slut walks reinforce the Madonna whore dichotomy. They promote a particularly toxic type of feminism, which focuses on individual choice while refusing to examine the systematic and institutional issues that limit those choices, and excludes marginalised groups of women who already feel mainstream feminism isn't for them. Okay, so by harm to feminism, What do we mean? We mean that the goals of feminism, formal stuff like policy changes, decreasing violence against women, and informal stuff like changing societal attitudes, are made harder to do by this and aren't achieved by slut walks. Right, we recognise that there are many different types of feminisms. We think that the sort of question in this debate is considering as far as possible the impact of one manifestation of a type of feminism on feminism in general. Right. So I'm going to be talking about three things today in my speech. Firstly, how this fails to tackle the real causes of violence against women and actually makes that harder to do. Secondly, how this completely fails to reclaim the word slut, which is something which is pretty much impossible anyway, right? And finally, how this fails to include lots of groups of women, particularly ones who already feel like they're marginalised by mainstream feminism, right? First point, how this fails to tackle the causes of violence against women and it ignores and obscures the real issues, right? So what slut walks do is they say that the status quo problem is that people blame women for what they wear and they shouldn't do that, right? That is the limit to the message that slut walks send. That is the level of analysis that you get from what happens at slut walks, right? What this does is completely ignore all the other types of other causes of sexual violence and other types of victim blaming, which in many cases are more pervasive and actually instead reinforces them, right? So we think one of the ways it does this is that it emphasises stranger danger over the truth that actually lots of perpetrators of sexual assault and rape are actually known to their victims, right? So there are a lot of very harmful victim blaming ideas around this that, you know, it's not really rape if it's your partner, which are actually incredibly insidious, not just within the sort of society on sort of like the way that people talk about sexual assault and rape, but actually institutionalised in the way that the police and courts deal with rape cases, which is incredibly problematic. We think that protest against sexual assault, which actually completely ignores this as a problem, completely ignores the extent to which this is institutionalised as a problem, is incredibly harmful, right? Secondly, it ignores the structural reasons why women don't report rape and why women don't report sexual assault, and it doesn't get prosecuted, right? So we think that this completely washes over the harsh reality of the way that women are actually treated by the police and by others, and the way that they're silenced, especially non-rich women, especially non-white women, when they attempt to report things like sexual assault, right? We think at the point where you uproot feminism from resistance, where you present it as something as superficial as the message that you get from slut walks is that people blame women because they wear it, when actually the problem is so much greater than that, that's incredibly harmful. Second point, this fails to reclaim the word slut, which actually just isn't possible, right? Okay, so like 3 years after the first slut walk in 2011, like slut is still an insult. So like as far as we can see so far, it simply hasn't worked, right? So why is this? A successful reclamation of a word requires some control over the meaning of the word. We don't have control over the meaning of a word when it is still widely used as an insult, right? So note for an example that say the reclamation of the N word, which still can only be said to be partially successful if you believe it's happened at all, right? This is only possible to be like a thing at the point where the word itself is actually largely taboo and not used as a standard everyday insult by like the vast majority of the population, right? So while it's able in this situation to empower certain like some people and certain people to use this word with a new significance, this actually still creates other problems, like the idea that you can now use this word for banter. Right, even if you think that the reclamation of the N-word has been successful. Right, so we think that also particularly, those people who are taking part in the slut walk often don't actually represent the people who are most often called, who are the people against whom slut is most often used as an insult. These people should probably be the ones in charge of reclaiming the word slut, right? So actually, it's very unclear at the point where people who the word slut is not actually normally used an insult against are attempting to reclaim it. That's probably incredibly problematic. It's unclear whether this actually helps the people against whom these sorts of insults are used the most, right? The problem for those for whom it remains a slur, there's a defence now. Oh, it's just banter, right? Because there are some people who think this word is okay. It's then okay to use it in an insulting context, right? When actually it's probably still used to insult these people, right? At the point you also lose any sort of solidarity. At the point where there are other women telling you, actually, no, just own it, it's fine, don't worry. It becomes much harder to do things to fight against the problems which led to you being called a slut in the first place. Right, so we think that it's actually impossible to reclaim this word, and actually the idea of a slut in general and why this is a sort of a problematic term to use, right, it's something that massively reinforces the Madonna whore dichotomy, actually encourages conformity with current norms, even if it's just one of the two current norms that exist, right, which is also incredibly bad. Finally, how this fails to include lots of different groups of women, right? So the type of feminism that slut walks promote is incredibly mainstream, is incredibly non-threatening, is incredibly heterosexual and white and middle class, and not intersectional at all, right? It's based on a sort of choice feminism, which assumes that everybody has the same choices, and that has the underlying assumption that the word slut is something which everyone is, which is, it's possible for everyone to reclaim in an equal way, right? As I've just told you, that's not really true. This means that it largely ignores the problems of lots of groups of women, particularly women of colour who are already like hypersexualized in Western culture. It actually then makes it harder to fight against this sort of hypersexualization, to fight against the use of slut as a derogatory term, when other people are claiming that, you know, this is their choice, right? Even though actually it's probably not true. It's probably better and easier to challenge stuff like this if you just say that, you know, this word isn't okay. It's not okay to use this language at all, right? Slut walks don't improve things for these women. They just make it harder for them to challenge these sort of problems, right? Of derogatory language being used in this way. So because of all the things I've said, slut walks are really bad for feminism.
Before I go on to make my main arguments about how I think that this absolutely is not true, I just want to respond to a couple of things that were said by but first of all, my involvement in the slut walks began when I was 16. It was straight after this stuff had gone on in Toronto, where a policeman giving advice on safety to a load of female students told them if they didn't want to get raped, they better not dress like sluts. I don't think it's fair to characterise the reaction to that, which was a grassroots movement of women in Toronto, and then after that from around the Western world, protesting against this kind of thing by trying to grab media attention in one of the most effective forms of grassroots feminist campaigning for years, as a way of washing away the real causes of victim blaming. That is what victim blaming is. It's saying you as a woman, what you do, your choices, affect how much you deserve to be raped, how much you deserve to be a victim of violence. And I think that this movement was fantastic at challenging that head on. It's about saying, regardless of what I do, no matter if I sleep with every man I come across, I still have the right to make a decision about my bodily safety and my bodily autonomy, and that there is no condition under which I am no less deserving of that safety. First of all, I just want to say that my metric for this debate, the success of this debate, isn't whether or not we reclaim the word slut. That had pretty much nothing to do with why I went on the slut walks. I went because I thought that was outrageous. I went because my experience of nightlife involved people putting their hands up your skirt because you're wearing a skirt, so they're entitled to do that. I saw that as a completely abhorrent thing to be said by law enforcement who are responsible for keeping you safe, especially in what we consider quite an advanced society that is very civilised and advocates gender equality. I think whether or not the feminist movement benefited is a much better metric for judging whether or not the slut walks helped feminism. First of all, some quick rebuttal. I'm not sure why this reinforces stranger danger or the wrong sides of rape. A lot of the placards that were being carried on these marches for me in Newcastle, I saw several saying things like, for me it was my boyfriend, does that make it okay? There was one saying, I was wearing jeans, does that make it okay? Does that make it worse, I think was the question. It was about challenging the idea that is your decision to walk down a dark street late at night wearing a short skirt puts you at danger. It was saying, actually no, it's not, that isn't a valid choice about how to protect yourself, because you're more likely to be raped by someone you know, by a family member, by someone you're in a relationship with. It was just inaccurate advice, it was morally wrong advice, and that was what was being challenged. We also heard that this washes away the reason for low reporting of race. We heard no actual explanation of why. I'm not sure it does wash away that reason. I had no reason to believe that that is the case. About reclaiming the word slut, yes, it's still an insult. It was before. I don't think it's made it more acceptable as an insult. I think both men and women have used it as an insult before then and since then. I'm not sure it's made that worse. I really don't think it has. Who it's used against? We heard that there are some women more at risk. That's probably true. But I'll go on to talk about why I think these marginalised groups actually are why part of the reason that this was such a powerful form of pop feminism. But I think it's used against all women. I think when the burqa ban was instituted in France, a lot of women who continued to wear the burqa faced much more aggressive assault and verbal abuse from the general public, including being called sluts. It's very clear that the word slut is not tied to your sexual behaviour or your perceived modesty. It is a slur used against women because women's behaviour and choices are inherently considered less valid than men's. It is a slur to denigrate women, their behaviour and their bodies, and I think it's absolutely right that women who choose to try and reclaim that have every right to do so and shouldn't be criticised for doing so. So what am I going to try and tell you? I want to try and tell you that the feminist movement massively benefited from a new generation of feminists who had a real understanding of why they were joining the feminist movement, and also from the news coverage that this particular combination of elements in campaigning gave them. First of all, I think what was so fantastic about this is it was a very rare example of wide coverage of a feminist issue without compromising on principles. Recent examples of widely covered feminism, I'd say probably He for She, Emma Watson's speech, is the main one that comes to mind, which was the majority of the airtime of that was devoted to the fact that men should stop hate, that feminists should appeal more to men. While I don't think Emma Watson is the worst thing that happened to feminism, I think this was a fantastic example of people saying, no, this is a grassroots campaign, not Sheryl Sandberg or billionaire actors telling me how to do feminism. This is ordinary women taking to the streets in Toronto, it was women from all walks of life. For us in Newcastle, the girl who organised it was a 14-year-old from Gateshead. Who said, I think this is ridiculous, I'm going to do this, and they created an organisation of women that is now the Northeast Feminist Network. They put on conferences every year, they work with local universities and colleges, and it is fantastic. It's about ordinary women taking control of an issue that affects ordinary women, rather than issues that largely undermine feminism because of their perceived triviality, like high-level pay, which tends to be a lot of the kind of stuff that dominates the headlines when you've got people like Nicki Minaj talking about why she's not paid enough, which, while a valid discussion, I'm not trying to say that there isn't sexism for high-level women. It's much more relatable. It seems much less trivial because it's about real-life violence. What we thought was particularly important was that quite often a lot of really important aspects of feminism, so discussions about microaggression, so like the Everyday Sexism Project on Twitter, it's fantastic work that they're doing about revealing everyday sexism. One of the slight problems is that these microaggressions on their own can be perceived as trivial. And when they're reported on, they're often presented as trivial. And therefore, feminism as a whole, and this mass movement of feminism that is kind of starting to emerge, is often represented as trivial. And I think it's really excellent that something like this was able to pull that kind of activism, and pull it back down to really hardcore issues and say, it's not these on their own. It's the fact that these are related to a vastly dangerous, pernicious perception of women and their choices and their behaviour, and how they endanger themselves. And that was what made it so powerful. It was a fun, it was a headline-grabbing, photo opportunity, media-friendly way of campaigning on a serious issue that matters to pretty much all women. So my final point, I think it addresses a really important message, one of the underlying issues of sexism, the idea that women's sexual choices are inherently less moral and less valid than men's. That they endanger themselves, I talked about this already, and I think it's one that cuts across class, race, nationalities and faiths. I think throughout cultures across the world, there are various forms of this discrimination, and it is related very much to women's sex lives and their sexual choices. And it has been seen, and particularly in the Western world where a lot of the legal rights been an issue, it's a fantastic way for a new generation of feminists to become feminists and activists themselves. Thank you.
What I want to talk about really is kind of two things. So firstly, it's a little bit about what is this feminism of the future that we want to shape, that Saskia wants to contribute to, and that probably is the point of most activist movements and most demonstrations of this form. Within that, we'll talk a bit about choice. We might talk a bit about reclamation, but I think it was kind of quite comprehensive on that one. A few responses first. So first of all, we get this idea that, you know, this is great because what we've got was media attention for victim blaming and the problems that surround that. Like, obviously we agree, right, that victim blaming, that sexual harassment are some of the most horrific things that face women in the UK right now, that they're terrible, I mean, to do something about it. What we disagree on is that this was the thing that you should do. Right, that a movement with this characterisation and with this kind of mechanism for gathering headlines and this kind of branding was the movement that should have dealt with those problems. Because what we see is a movement that chose to use provocation for attention and a movement that chose to use the word slut as a key part of its branding, causing an inevitable slide towards an attempt to reclaim that word, and to have inevitable media attention on it. Like, I also went on a slut walk in 2011, I think most people who are interested in that kind of thing did, and it was, to be honest, like a horrible betrayal afterwards to see the media reports, people talking to people at that march and saying, yeah, this is about reclaiming the word slut, this is reclaiming our right to do this and to do that, and it's like, no, it's not, is it? It's about something a lot more serious than that, and it's a problem that those more serious things get obscured by those other goals, whether or not they're admirable. Notice that this isn't the only possible world, right? There are alternatives. Look at things like Take Back the Night, which was an immensely successful movement that looked at this precise issue, right? They looked at victim blaming, they looked at police reporting, and the way that they dealt with like all of these kinds of issues that broadly just stopped in 2011, right? Those activists moved towards things like Slut Walk, media attention moved towards things like Slut Walk, and that was hard for Take Back the Night. And sad people who are involved in that. So the second thing is that Saskia says, well, we see no reason why this washes away race. Like, wouldn't be so dismissive about that, and I'll talk a bit about that at the end. And then finally we get this idea that it's resisting the trivialisation of feminism whilst also being fun and media friendly. Like, it's a bit unclear how that can happen, but it's also unclear that we couldn't resist the trivialisation of feminism in other ways, like exactly the sort of everyday sexism stuff that she talks about. So, next thing. Shaping feminism of the future. Like, what's important then in this debate is that we notice that every single time you as an activist make a choice to go on a particular protest, to take part in a particular movement, to do a thing, that you're inevitably bound up with the consequences of that action, right? With the way that it presents itself in the media and the impact it has on the lives of others. That's presumably the reason why you went on that march, and that's what matters. Anything media worthy has to consider that. So what we need to recognise about something like Slut Walk is that by taking the spotlight and by speaking, you inevitably speak for, right? There is no speaking without speaking on behalf of others. Whether that's intentional, whether that's something you even desire, it's an inevitability. Because what you do when you are the person who's interviewed by BBC News, or you are the person who gets the quote in the Daily Mail or whatever, is that you're the only person who has allowed their voice on that issue. And it's therefore, like, I think, obligatory that you consider what the impact of your words is on the words of others, right? On all the other people who could have spoken and all the other people for whom you are speaking. So let's look at two things that characterise this campaign and two ways in which people chose to speak about that action, chose to speak about the way that they went on those walks in 2011 mainly, but also subsequently. So first thing we looked at, as we see as a big characterising feature, is choice, right? A huge thing that characterises campaigns is this idea that this is all about the choices that women make, and not only in respect of that you shouldn't be judged for those choices, and not only in respect of that other people ought not to choose to be massive dicks, right, and to say horrible things about women who choose to do various things and to do various horrible things to those women. But furthermore, this is a choice for women, right? We make a positive step to go out and say, I'm going to reclaim sluts, right? Or I'm going to reclaim being a sexually active woman in 2011, right? Because that's a normal, healthy thing to do. All of those things they characterise as choices for those women. But what they obscure when they talk about things in that way, and when they say that feminism is now something that is not just about getting rid of the worst inequalities in our world, and feminism is not just about fighting for the most vulnerable and the most oppressed women in our society, but feminism is now about promoting individual choice, about trying to kind of have it all that sort of thing, is they overlook three things, right? They overlook three ways in which this is not a choice for everyone, and three ways in which they make those people's voices harder to hear. Three reasons, then, why this is not a choice for everyone. So the first is, evidently, that for some people in some circumstances, standing up and calling yourself a slut and wearing the various things people chose to wear on these marches, not very much, could be a dangerous action for you. And it's sad that it's a dangerous action for some people and not for others. And it's horrific that people find themselves in circumstances where they would be caused danger by making certain choices. However, it is not good enough for some people to stand up on their behalf and say, isn't it great that we get to make that choice? Because that's not something that everyone faces, and it's not something that we can pretend will just go away. The second thing we notice is that for some people, this kind of action might come at a particular personal cost, right? You might see yourself as a feminist, you might even see yourself as being on the cutting edge of modern feminism and someone who wants to be involved in lots of feminist activist movements at their time, but you find yourself excluded by a particular movement that imposes an incredible personal cost to identity for some women and not for others, and one that says, we shape this kind of feminism, we apparently want everyone to be included, but we also want to be super provocative, right? And that makes it harder for some women to join in, and harder for some women to say, I too will go on this slut walk. That's not something that's easy for everybody to do, and it's not okay to say to people to whom that's not easy, who often are in various vulnerable situations, that they can just, like, do something else that weekend, right? If that's the activism that's going on in that area, that's not good enough. Finally, and this is where some of the race and intersectionality stuff plays in, is that we need to notice that we live in a world where being called a slut is not always an opt-in kind of thing, right? It's not always, I get to go on this march, I get to dress up in this way, and I get to opt into that kind of discourse. We live in a world where particular women are faced with much more pernicious forms of violence against their bodies and violence against their identities on a daily basis. I wrote, like, some stuff about this, but I think the better thing to do is just to read to you, and to read to you from an open letter which was started by Black Women's Blueprint, that's been signed by about 350 different people and organisations. And what this, and the gist of it is that it's kind of that slut walks were representative of a kind of wider trend in feminism that shut out certain voices. And what they wrote was this, and they wrote, "We know that slut walk is a call to action, and we have heard you. Yet we struggle with the decision to answer this call by joining with or supporting something that even in name exemplifies the ways in which mainstream women's movements have repeatedly excluded black women, even in spaces where our participation is most critical." And they write, although we vehemently support a woman's right to wear whatever she wants, anytime, anywhere, within the context of a slut walk, we don't have the privilege to walk through the streets of New York City, Detroit, etc., either half-naked or fully clothed, self-identifying as sluts, and think that this will make women safer in our communities an hour later, a month later, or a year later. And it's not okay to ignore those voices, right? And it's not okay to say that other forms of feminism will deal with them when you're the person who stands in the spotlight and you're the person who speaks for everyone. Stand with our side of the motion.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming, and thank you to the organisers for inviting me here today as well. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight. I understand you have these every week, so you're all familiar with the format. It's kind of all new for me, but let's begin. Now, the debate has started off with the presumption that feminism is synonymous with the best interests of women, and that's the kind of presumption that's there in all of the presentations that we've heard today. Now, slut walks, I would argue, certainly harm women, but it doesn't harm feminism, and this is why. It's because the ideal of sexual autonomy and the glorification of sexual freedom fundamentally represents the ideal of feminism, but it is not always the ideal for women. Now, this debate helpfully highlights this contradiction within feminism. And if the motion today was that slut walks harms women, I would be arguing for the proposition rather than the opposition. But the motion today is whether slut walk harms the ideology of feminism. And in this case, I argue, and feminists must agree, that slut walks are wholly consistent with the ideology of feminism. Now, feminism has really no sound basis on which to advocate against the objectification of women, other than personal taste, when it at the same time advocates sexual autonomy. Now, slut walks, in other words, the glorification of sexual autonomy, is basically the natural consequence of the feminist ideal of sexual autonomy. And in order to argue in favour of the motion tonight, you have to be consistent as feminists and abandon feminism's core ideal of sexual autonomy. Now, the first issue I want to bring up is actually a sensitive one. And so I'm going to bring up a couple of points, and it's with regards to rape. And this is a sensitive topic, but this is one of the reasons that Slut Walk was established in order to raise these questions. So the first is that nobody here, I hope, is ever arguing or ever going to seriously argue that rape is ever justified, regardless of what a person is wearing. That's not in question here. But you don't have to accept either that covering up will guarantee your safety or make you invincible to attacks. Nobody's saying that. However, what can be guaranteed is that embracing being sexually free or embracing the term of slut also does nothing to prevent you from such attacks as well. So what is the point of this? Now, claiming also, this is something else which often comes out in discussions of slut walks, that we need to teach men not to rape. Now, this presumes that your average rapist is, you know, an average rational man with whom you can actually reason to begin with. Rapists are criminals, and criminals usually commit crimes despite having been taught otherwise. Now, relying on the goodwill of criminals alone, instead of doing what you can to protect yourself, is like saying we shouldn't have to tell kids not to take sweets from strangers. We should just be teaching people not to kidnap. It's like saying we shouldn't have to lock our houses, we should just be telling people not to burgle. And this is not a matter of victim blaming. This is simply acknowledging that you cannot rely on the goodwill of those people that have criminal tendencies. I'll take them at the end if you don't mind. Now, the second point I'd like to raise is to do with sexual freedom. Now, Slutwalks is not just about reclaiming a word. It's about feminism advocating the sexual freedom of women. Thus, the word slut is not equivalent, as is often claimed, and including it was claimed by the founder of Slutwalks, it's not the equivalent of the word queer or gay. For example, one is attributed to the chosen behaviours of a person, whereas the other is attributed to the characteristics of the person. So they're not real equivalents. The real equivalent of the word slut becomes apparent when you consider that to actually advocate sexual freedom of women, as feminism does, is also to approve of the sexual freedom of men as well. So the real equivalent to slut, I would say, is the word womanizer. When men celebrate their sexual freedoms by sleeping around without care, commitment, or responsibility, or generally being flirtatious in that way, they're often called womanizers. So should men now have parades dedicated to celebrating womanizing? I mean, you are, after all, they're just exercising their sexual freedoms. Would women be okay with that? I don't think so. But you see, slut walks make inherent sense for feminism's ideal of sexual freedom, but it doesn't actually make sense for the well-being of women themselves. Now, the third point I want to raise also relates to rape. And it's the contentious issue of consent. And everyone agrees that in a society, consent is a contentious issue with regards to, you know, rape. Now, when feminism advocates sexual freedom, it opens up basically an anarchic situation in which people are basically interacting with each other without any rules of engagement, meaning that sexually free actually takes on a whole new meaning and ends up meaning sexually free to be exploited. Now, if you want the freedom of the jungle, you end up with the rules of the jungle as well, unfortunately, and you end up with serious social and legal problems with consent. For example, in August 2014, the now retired judge, Mary Jane Mowat, she explained that at trial, it is inevitable that it is one person's word against another, and the burden of proof is that you have to be sure before you convict, and that juries are often put into very difficult positions when the victim says they can't remember what happened, they can't remember whether they consented or not. And off the back of this, the judge said that rape conviction statistics will not improve until women stop getting drunk. Now, this is, you know, in Islam has a very clear system of establishing consent that deals with this unfair situation. And in addition to, for example, prohibiting alcohol altogether, in Islam there is no legitimate consent by men or women when it's outside of marriage. Now, the final area I want to turn to is that of sexual harassment generally, which is different from the topics of rape because it's a different context. Now, slut walks, like feminism, advocate again that women should be able to dress however they want, including attractively, so that they might attract the kind of attention that they want. But then they complain when they attract the attention that is undesirable to them, and then say that women shouldn't be judged by what they're wearing. Now, firstly, telling people not to judge or react to others by their physical appearance is like telling a doctor not to judge a condition based on the symptoms. Secondly, and finally, there's a lack of consistency here. For any woman that responds positively to sexual advances in the public sphere is approving sexual advances in the public sphere, including the undesirable ones, and like it or not, is implicitly justifying or facilitating the sexual harassment of other women. Now, short of men being psychic, there is no other real option here. So slut walks, I would argue, do not harm feminism. Slut walks are no more than the consistent advocacy of feminist ideals of sexual autonomy. And in order to argue in favour of the motion, you have to abandon feminism's core ideal of sexual autonomy. I would end with the advice to be consistent. Thank you so much for listening.
We'd like to thank Zara for that speech. So we will now be moving on to floor speeches. These are speeches up to 3 minutes in length. First in proposition, then an opposition, then an abstention of motion. We will be banning ones at 30 seconds, ones at 2 minutes 30 seconds between that time. The audience may offer points of information, and we will be banning twice at 3 minutes. So, is there anybody that would like to give a speech?
I've got a question.
Sure.
Is that okay? So, proposition, I'm not okay, so apologies if I get it all wrong. I got your point very clearly that if it was up to you, you wouldn't do this particular kind of protest. What I didn't quite understand is why you felt that nobody should do that kind of protest. Yes. And it's that Saskia made an extremely clear case that lots of young people, sort of about 14-year-olds who haven't studied gender or LGBT or intersexuality at university level, found this as a very accessible way to engage with complicated issues. And I don't think you really addressed that. Even if you don't want to do it, and you think that people with a similar kind of experience to you don't want to do it, why can't those people do it?
Thank you very much. And what's your name, sorry?
Finn.
Finn. Thank you very much.
So I promise it'll take less than 3 minutes. But it seems from the floor this comes down to two sides, right? From the proposition, we obviously probably have to face the question, does any form of protest have to be universal? Can't it be just for the people who are doing it? Is the idea that I can go to a slut walk and go, well, there are lots of other people who experience similar forms of sexism to me, and that means I'm not alone. That means I'm probably more likely to go and stand up and fight against these sorts of things in future. Because when I know, when I raise my voice to my boss or in my list of work when someone says something incredibly sexist, I know that at least there are some other women who are on my side. But I think for the opposition, the question also has to be raised, for proposition, it's probably a thing, right, that everyone looking around and going, well, there are the sluts, and feminism equals sluts' rights. It's probably something that's not helping the motion, right? The femin, you're the sort of the French protesters who protest topless because they know that's how you get media coverage. If a woman is topless and we paint the slogan on her chest, and everyone's reading the slogan, but they're really looking at her boobs. Isn't that the same as like page three women who go, well, I'm really in favor of nuclear disarmament while I pose here and like, everyone knows what we're really looking at, and everyone knows what actually the cause represents. So isn't perception something to really think about, even if it is good for those individual feminists who choose to go on? Can we have solidarity online instead of slut walks? Isn't safe spaces like the everyday sexism Twitter a better way to do it so it's a women only space? It's a slut walks, which are inherently public and therefore open to public perception. So
yeah, that was my, I promise, under 3 minute full speech. Thank you very much, Alex, for that speech. Is there anyone who would like to give a speech in proposition of the motion first?
I just want to make a point that the whole term slut is quite an interesting one because we generally have this point of view that harms feminism in terms of intersectionality because feminism is supposed to be about including everyone. With the slut walk, we saw a lot of people, you know, wearing lace bras, etc., etc. Where if you go to different parts of the world, being a slut would be not wearing a like scarf around your neck, or say wearing jeans like this. Like in some Arab worlds, I'd be considered to be dressing sluttily. So a slut walk is a problem because it moved to like one extreme of wearing like that sort of clothing. So that's sort of a problem that I have with the slut walk. But also, like, some men sexualize women who are completely covered up. I mean, we all know about, there's, like, a massive, like, how do I explain it? Like, there's lots of nuns in porn, for example. I mean, what do we do then? A woman who's completely covered up that we manage to sexualize. And that just causes another problem. Like, a woman wearing nothing is sexualized, a woman wearing everything is sexualized. So, slut walk has this problem.
Thank you very much, and here for that point. Is there anyone in opposition of a motion? Abstention? Proposition? Go for it.
Yeah, hi.
I just was a bit confused about your argument in the sense that are you trying to say that the feminist ideals inherently are flawed and that if you're consistent with them, then things that promote feminism are bad for women? Because I kind of didn't understand what you were opposing.
Sure.
Yes. So, sorry, the speeches can be answered afterwards in the summary speech.
Okay,
you'll be able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
And your name was? Sorry?
Toomey.
Toomey, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to ask a question or a speech? Yes?
speech for proposition. This will be very short. I just wanted to simply raise a sort of a scenario that you could easily imagine, or at least I could easily imagine. If there was a victim of sexual harassment, or, you know, you, if they were at this point feeling particularly vulnerable, as I'm sure many do, and they are not one who would consider themselves as sort of out there sexually, you know, they're not that kind of person, and they're sort of relying on feminism a bit at this point to kind of help them bring back their confidence and their you know, their ability to be themselves. They're relying on feminism, and then they see on the television, they see these women, you know, going on these parades, dressed how they are dressed, and suddenly, surely, wouldn't they think, if they were not that kind of person, would they not think that maybe feminism has let them down a bit? Has sort of feminism not represented their side of the argument? Because they do not consider themselves as one of those people. And so, you know, in that way, maybe feminism has actually let those people down. And that's it.
Is there anyone else that would like to give a speech?
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Is the proposition not holding women, and especially feminists, to an incredibly high standard? It was one campaign, one particular issue, in response to one remark from an officer, and now they're being sort of accused of pushing like feminism in the worst light ever, and it seems like it was just really one campaign, one issue, and I think really we're holding it to extremely high standards and letting down all the women behind and walking around in the lace of art.
So let's give a speech. Yes?
Yeah, just a quick point. Feminism supports sexual autonomy of women, and slut walks is an expression of this ideal of the sexual autonomy of women. So I don't think it would really harm feminism, if I understand Zara's point, but really it's just a continuation of the next logical step for feminism. I mean, I would argue that the issue of sexual objectification is a bit of a problem because it comes from the advocacy of sexual autonomy. So if women are free to express sexuality, then a woman goes out and expresses her sexuality by dressing how she wants. If someone takes a picture of that and then just posts it, with her consent of course, and posts it on magazines or billboards, you can't say that's sexual objectification of women, because the woman in that picture gave consent expressing her sexual autonomy. So you're in a kind of a loop here which feminism itself is causing part of the problem. And so I don't think slut walks harms feminism as such, but just really the next logical step of feminism.
Thank you very much, and your name is?
Abdullah.
Abdullah, thank you very much. Anybody else? Yes, and your name is?
Oh, Ellie.
Ellie?
I just had a question for Zara. That's when you spoke about...
Sorry, I can't see. Oh, okay, there you are, yeah.
when you spoke about rape, you compared it to other crimes like thieving and people breaking into your home. But I think it's very different to other crimes in that it's not someone taking something that they want, it's more someone taking something that they think is already theirs. And do you not think this kind of idea of male entitlement that has kind of been created, does that not come into it?
Okay, I'll respond to it in the end, thank you.
Yeah. We have time for one more, so yes.
Just a quick question to all of the speakers, actually. I don't think anyone quite clarified what they meant by feminism, because that's what this motion hinges on. I think once you define what feminism is, then we can judge whether slut walks do harm feminism or not.
Okay,
and then the rest of that.
Excellent. Thanks for everyone for your questions. We will now be moving on to the summary speeches. These are 4 minutes in length, and we will be starting with the opposition, then moving on to the proposition. Please bear in mind that no points of information or no questions are allowed during these speeches. So we'll begin with the opposition. Would you like to split your time into 2 minutes and 2 minutes, or would you like to give it in 1 minute?
Yes, please. Yeah, that would be fine.
Split it?
Thank you.
Excellent. So, whenever you're ready.
I'll leave that.
I think it's very important to sort of clarify what I'm trying to argue here. I think feminism is a movement for women's freedom, their equality with men in an economic, cultural, social, political fashion. I think that's full equality, judging them by the same standards that you judge men. So I'm okay with men being promiscuous as long as women are allowed to be promiscuous too without facing fear of violence, and that is totally fine by me. I also want to clarify, I don't think that slut walk, reclaim the word slut successfully. I don't mind that. I don't think it raised reporting rates, nor do I think it intended to do that on sexual violence. I think what it achieved was shaping a new generation of feminism and a new identity for a new generation of feminists, making them activists for the first time in their lives. And I think it got coverage for an issue and started a debate about an issue like this one that otherwise wasn't being covered. And it caused a response to an utterly inappropriate form of advice, which means that now when police give out that kind of advice, it doesn't go unchallenged. And I think that is powerful. I also think it's important to talk about sexual violence, remembering that it's assault, it's not a property crime, it's not the same as theft. I also don't think it's ever helpful to discuss criminals as though they're all one state of mind and they have no possible reasoning power. And I also think the level of its prevalence means that it's not equivalent to child abduction. It is a massively prevalent crime. 1 in 4 women in the UK face sexual violence at some point in their lifetime. I don't think that's something we can dismiss out of hand as some weird, bizarre anomaly. I think it's really important to talk about the fact that the power of this movement was its ability to achieve coverage, but that it was about more than just being covered. It created a new generation of feminists who were able to say, we have our own cause. Yes, my mum campaigned for abortion rights in Germany when she was a teenager. She and my dad, who are both active feminists, are a bit squeamish about issues of sexual liberation. I am able to say, this is an issue that I care about. This is something I believe in. And the fact that I was able to be covered, I was on the front page of the G2, despite wearing the fact that I was wearing a long summer dress and a red hoodie. I don't think it's as simple as, if you have boobs there, it undermines the message. I think it is true that this was about saying that it was about highlighting the problem that nakedness is an erroneous marker for your safety from sexual violence, your legitimacy as someone to speak on behalf of women. I think it was incredibly powerful, and I urge you to oppose.
Okay, well, thank you for the questions that came from the floor. From Tooney, did I get your name right? Yeah, Tooney and Ellie, I've got questions from you both, so I'm going to deal with those first. You asked whether I think the ideology of feminism is flawed. Yes, which is why the premise of my presentation to begin with was that slut walks is inherent to feminism, but it is something that harms women. And there's often this presumption that what is part of feminism is somehow automatically beneficial for women, but we never stop to actually examine carefully what these claims actually are and what these ideologies actually are. And the idea of sexual autonomy, which as I mentioned in my presentation, opens women and men up to numerous vulnerabilities, is something that is harmful for women, but is unfortunately part and parcel of feminism. And this is why I argue today that slut walks doesn't harm feminism, as per the title, but it does harm women. And the other question was, that raised by Ellie, saying that there's the issue of male entitlement in rape, and that you can't be equated to like theft or things like that. Now, all crimes are forms of theft, if you think about it. All crimes are forms of theft. Rape is a form of theft of somebody's a right to their own body, somebody's bodily, basically, safety. Theft is a form of theft. Murder is a form of theft of somebody's life. All crimes are a form of theft. So the analogy is not lost. The analogy is simply showing that in order to, if you're telling somebody to take an action to protect themselves, this is not blaming them. This is not saying, if you didn't do this, you are to blame. Because as I also mentioned in my presentation, there is never an excuse for these kinds of things. All I'm saying is that if there are precautions that people can take, why would we not take them when we take them in every other aspect of our life? So I would end just to say that slut walks does indeed harm women, but it doesn't harm feminism, because the idea of sexual autonomy is something propagated by feminism blindly and often at the detriment of women. Thank you so much.
I'd like to thank the opposition for their speeches. We will now be moving on to the summary speeches of the proposition. Will you be splitting that? The summary speech, please.
So the debate room kind of wants to just respond to some of the stuff that we heard in the first summary speech, but she also responded to the other opposition person. But the person in me wants to say there are a couple of things that we just need to talk about that from what we've just heard. It wouldn't be a great debate decision, and maybe it's a waste of 4 minutes. Let's go for it anyway. This last thing we heard about, like, it is to say, because everything is a form of theft if you
think about it, why not take precaution? It's like, I don't, to give an equally inappropriate analogy in response to the one that we just heard, like, red and blue, both forms of colour, right? Pretty different. Probably you can distinguish between red and blue. Probably if you were someone who was colourblind, you might respond differently to those colours. Maybe if you saw a red light and a blue light, a green would be a better option. A red light and a green light at traffic, you would do different things. The point here is that saying that kind of stuff is preposterous, quite frankly. In a world where if a man goes to a club dressed in board shorts and nothing else, probably no one's going to pinch his ass, right? If a woman goes to a club dressed maybe not even in a board shorts and nothing else, right, but in like normal clothes that you might wear every day to your lecture, that you might have dinner with your mum with, that you would probably get groped, right? You probably would get assaulted. The point is that people don't have those same choices, and that's not the same as with theft, right? We don't act in gendered ways to how whether men or women leave their doors unlocked, right? That's probably why theft is different to rape, and why it's at best foolish, and at worst slightly offensive to make those kinds of analogies. General ramble that hopefully will confuse things. A couple of questions. So we've got some really excellent questions actually in the debate. So the first one, in terms of what is feminism, broadly agree with the definition that we heard from the first summary speaker. Like, it's about getting to a state where women and men can both go out in the world, live their daily lives, make decisions, and get judged and treated no differently for those decisions on the basis of their gender, the one in which some are privileged over others. On the question of am I holding feminism to a very high standard, well, maybe I am, maybe that's unreasonable. I think it's still a standard that we ought to strive for. And thirdly, on the question of Finn's question about why, you know, I get why you don't want to do this, but why should no one do this? I think this is the crux of the debate, it's a great question. And therefore have sort of three responses. So the first one is that I think when you speak, what you inevitably do is speak for, right? So if I make a decision to go on a certain process, I inevitably have to decide whether that was the best of all possible protests I could have gone on. And that sort of raises the second thing, which I think that people have a duty then to look at all those possible choices and make reflective decisions about how they think any particular choice they would make would affect everyone else in the world. That's unfortunate, but I think that's true. And the third one is just that, like, I agree there are multiple feminisms, and probably in the real world people should do what they want. But ultimately we do have to recognise that any one particular feminism might advantage its own members, but nevertheless be damaging other branches of other feminisms. And therefore, in some sense, we can consider this motion as being what is the impact on the sort of net, the net whole, the net sum. So, by way of conclusion, a sort of general couple of comments. So, I think it's this, right, which is that we are in an amazing position where feminism in the last few years has just, is everywhere in a way that 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it wasn't. And in a way that it was demonised and shut out of mainstream media, and that's incredible. And therefore, every single person in this room today who considers himself a feminist, and every single person out there, whatever, who is going on slut walks or taking part in activist movements, stands at a crossroads that no one since like the 1980s has stood at, right? They stand at a point, like a sort of nexus of choice, where they get to determine, we get to determine, what the future shape of that movement is, and what we think the core principles that ought to underlie any reasonable feminism should take. And that crossroads is this. Do we declare that the main bulk of the battle, not just of feminism, but of every sort of resistance movement, of every anti-capitalist demonstration, every movement for structural change is taken, and say that fight is broadly won, we can go for liberal feminism? Or do we go down the other path, which says that all of these things are tied together, right? My feminism, my anti-racism, my anti-capitalism to some extent, a bit more fuzzy on my last one, are all inextricably bound that you cannot deal with one without the other, and therefore you can never ask any of these questions that we ask of people in Slutwalk without considering the ramifications in all of those spheres. And that's a true intersectional path, and the path that I ask you to take is a path that's unfortunately prepared for Slutwalk's harmfulness.
And indeed all speakers for today's debate, can I please ask you for a final round of applause? So, if you would like to vote in proposition of the motion, please raise your hand now. The options are proposition, opposition, and abstention. Keep them up for a second. Thank you very much. If you would like to vote in opposition of the motion, please raise your hand now. And if you would like to vote in abstention of the motion, please raise your hand now. Thank you very much. So our committee will just be counting the votes, adding up the votes right now. And now to announce the results of today's debate. So in first place is opposition with 31 votes. In second place is proposition, narrowly with 22 votes. And abstention has 17 votes. So once again, we'd like to thank all speakers for coming today. Thank you all.
I didn't hear some of the things.
Thank you so much.
I think I saw you speak at